inconceivable!
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough roads to get up to 88. Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Hello and welcome again to the Good Trash Genre Cast. We are once again the USCO Film Society together deep in the bowels of the UCO Liberal Arts Building, somewhere hidden in the English department, broadcasting to you all about movies that are good trash. They are movies that are popcorn movies available on Netflix, but they are worth thinking about in a deeper way, and that's what we do today. Let's do some introductions. First of all, my name is Dustin Sells. I am a grad student here in the 21st Century Studies program. We have our two regular hosts here tonight. First of all, to my right, Mr. Dalton Stewart. Introduce yourself.
I think you just did that for me, actually. Hi, I'm Dalton Stewart. I'm a sociology undergrad here at the University of Central Oklahoma.
And without introducing him for him, to my left,
I'm Arthur Gordon. I'm also a graduate student in the English 20th and 21st Century Literature program.
And we have a female host on tonight. Can you please introduce yourself, ma'am?
Yeah, I'm Ashley, and my major is humanities.
So we are going to have a great time together tonight. We're going to be talking a bit about The Fifth Element. But before we do that, we do have a little listener feedback that we'd like to address. Dalton, tell us what's been going on the interwebs.
Well, you know, we put out the call to our listeners and encourage them to send us all things film. You know, if you've got something you're interested in, you've got a film you saw recently you'd like to talk about, shoot it at us. Because we love listener feedback. We love all things movie. And we love disparaging comments against us. So all of those things are more than welcome.
If you have something bad to say about us, we would love to hear that.
Absolutely.
Really.
Our first listener is Kyle Davison. He is a creative studies major here at the University of Central Oklahoma. Kyle Davison saw Dread 3D this weekend. Kyle has this to say about the film. It is a very rare example of a remake that surpasses the original. It didn't take itself too seriously, and it was exactly what it was supposed to be. A great, visually driven action flick, had great acting, brutal action sequences, very dark humor, and a decent storyline. The original had none of the above. Also...
Correct.
Also, Carl Urban's chin deserves an Oscar nod. Wise words from Kyle. We have another listener by the name of Nick Sanford. Nick Sanford is actually a very good friend of mine. He is a student filmmaker at Oklahoma City Community College. We can't read his full review. Nick saw a screening of The Master here in Oklahoma City this weekend.
Excellent.
He has nothing but positive things to say about it. We will post a link to his full review in the show notes. Also, we have a Twitter comment from a gentleman by the name of @IamWiggins. @IamWiggins, and I love Twitter handles, has this to say. I now skip the first hour of Inception, because it's basically a tutorial for the remaining, more interesting 90 minutes, in my opinion.
Huh.
So, and that's most of our listener feedback. We've got some more for you guys at the end of the show, but again, we definitely appreciate all that.
Fantastic. All right, well, let's get on and let's talk a little bit about The Fifth Element. Arthur Gordon, do you have a synopsis for us today?
I do, Dustin. In the colorful future, a cab driver unwittingly becomes the central figure in the search for a legendary cosmic weapon to keep evil and Mr. Zorg at bay.
That was fantastic, sir. Say, where are they?
Earth?
Just say, where are... No, say, where are
where
they?
Where are they?
Fantastic.
My parents are dead.
You... That is incredible. Thank you. Thank you. We are remiss at having not discovered these innate talents that Mr. Gordon possesses, and we will no longer hear me do a synopsis. Absolutely fantastic.
In the near future.
Fantastic. Okay, so that's the quick synopsis of the film, The Fifth Element. Let's talk about what we thought. Arthur, what did you think about this movie?
Maybe overrated. I think this film's just kind of middling, you know, kind of sitting there. I don't know if this movie actually knows what it wants to do with itself. And so, and then, you know, worth watching once. I wouldn't pick it up again, I don't think.
Wow. Wow. That isn't, okay. Well, we will address what's wrong with that comment later. Dalton Stewart, what'd you think?
Well, I think as we did with the previous episode where we reviewed The Faculty, it's important to include a disclaimer that we do not, here at the Good Trash Genre Cast, advocate drug use of any kind. That being said, I feel like I fell into a field of psychedelic mushrooms and then watched Star Wars, and I mean that in a loving way. There is so much craziness going on in this movie that you can't help but love it, I think. I think it's just... delightful in the weirdest way.
Excellent, excellent. Ashley, what did you think about this movie?
I think I agree with Dalton. I mean, I enjoy it, but it's for all the weirdness that's inside of it.
I also am a big fan of the movie. I've seen it a lot. It is one of those great cult movies, and I think that's why I like it. It is so quotable. I mean, I don't know how many times I've said Lilo Dallas Multipass
in my So many times.
And it's just one of those things about the movie. There are a lot of things that are ridiculous about it. Chris Tucker, let's just name him right now. What on earth?
Whoa! What are you talking about? That's like easily the top three best things about this movie.
He's hot. No.
Yes. No. Yes, he is. He is amazing in this movie. It is literally the craziest and probably best thing he'll ever do.
But you can't tell me his performance here isn't based off Jim Carrey as the Riddler.
Oh.
What?
It's actually based on Prince.
Yeah.
Prince and Lenny
Kravitz.
Have you
seen Batman Forever? Have you seen The Fifth Element?
They're,
more than once.
They're comparable movies, but I like Fifth Element. I don't like Batman Forever. But I like the movie a lot because it is just that kind of fun community building, you know, watching it late night kind of movie.
Absolutely.
And there are so many things that should not work, like Ruby Rod, that somehow weirdly do. And I don't really have a rationale for why, but it does. So I dig it.
I think that's the perfect summation of this movie. Yeah. It on the surface, if you put this movie on a piece of paper, you say, wow, that just sounds terrible. Right. And it's amazing.
Yeah. And so, you know, Arthur, I'm going to give you the floor again because you did not like it. I know you've got some critical things to say about that. Also, I know you've got some technical analysis to apply to it, and that's what we're going to do now. So we've kind of done our initial look at it. Let's look a little deeper. Arthur, what'd you think?
Well, when we first started this movie, the Egypt sequence in the beginning, I thought, you know, this movie was made 3 years ago. I mean, some of these sequences and scenes hold up very well. It's very colorful, and some of the first thing I saw was animated. It's got a very comic kind of influence to it, and I kind of later found that out it does. And a lot of the set design was based off of Jean-Claude Mézières, if I'm saying that right, who it was uncredited but did a lot of the set work. He's a French comic writer, artist. And so there's a lot of that visual style, and I think that comes out. I like the colors, and there are things about the movie I liked, but it didn't save it for me. If this movie didn't have the overtop, these actors just selling out completely to these roles and just completely just living it up, hamming up, it wouldn't have worked. From Willis and Jovovich and even Ian Holm, I enjoyed. And Gary Oldman, the first couple of scenes I hated.
What?
But he grew on me, and I loved it by the end.
I was going to say.
Because
Oldman...
Okay!
And this movie once again proves that Oldman is arguably the most underrated actor of the last 20 years.
Oldman should play all villains forever and for always in every movie.
Amen. Yeah. I agree.
Any movie is
instantly better with Gary Oldman in it.
I think that goes without saying.
But like I was saying, Mézières was kind of the influence on the set design, and we see that with the floating taxi early on, a lot of the colors. But this movie was just... It didn't know where I wanted to be. The score was terrible at times. It was good at times. I hated the score at times, though. It was like Zalman King's Red Shoe Diaries at moments. And so the score killed me. Some of the bad acting killed me. Lister, his general, I don't know his name.
Oh, no, Tiny Lister? You didn't love Tiny? Oh my goodness.
It was pitiful.
Tiny Lister is the man who plays the president of the United States. He's also, he's
president
the,
of Earth. Or,
of Earth, yeah, or the world.
Unclear where we actually
Federation.
Are.
We're not sure what that place is.
The pace, it was too slow for me in the beginning. By the end, it picked up, but it was just killing me in the beginning. The last thing I want to say about this movie, this is an 80s movie made in the 90s with a 2000s mentality.
That's
fair. You make this movie 10 years earlier, it is a huge 80s cult cinema, Lost Boys kind of thing. You make this movie 10 years now in the future, you put Nicolas Cage in as the Bruce Willis character, and you've got a huge Nicolas Cage cult movie. But that's my feeling. This movie just didn't know where it wanted to go with its direction.
It wanted to go.
It's true. Visually, though, some of the things in here may have looked a lot like Star Wars. The ship designs, some of the character designs. Apparently, there's a little controversy that Jean-Claude Mézières actually influenced. And when I say influenced George Lucas, I mean he potentially took his ideas and just discredited him. for the original Star Wars trilogy.
That is, some of the Lucas stole Mezières'
right?
ideas.
Some of Mezières' comics were published in the late 60s, early 70s, before New Hope came out.
Huh.
And some of those things, from the Carbonite of Han Solo, some creature design, Darth Vader design, some of those things came straight
that
from
Leia,
the front.
That's Leia actually, in the slave
yeah,
suit.
Well, I actually specifically wrote down the ships at the Federation. That's totally a Star Destroyer
yeah.
with the front cut off.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really, I just thought that was an homage. That's
no.
really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So, but that's all I've got. That's
now, so let's talk a little bit more theory. Dalton, you have some things to say?
Yeah, I've got some depth to get into. Arthur is right. I hadn't thought of it in these terms, and he put it in words I hadn't considered. That's what works so well about this movie. It does have this bombastic 80s camp going to it, but it has that kind of this experimentation of genre that the 90s had going for it and had the slick style of like the early 2000s. Arthur, that's what works about this movie. What is wrong with you?
It just worked in the wrong way for me.
I
don't buy it.
I guess,
think there are some great sequences, but I just, on the whole, I don't think the film works. I don't think the good outweighs the bad here.
Really? See, I think all of... I mean, don't get me wrong. This movie's a mess. But in the best possible way.
Right. It, like a box of crayons exploded on the film.
Exactly.
Kind of mess. It's wonderful.
Exactly.
Well, if I wanted brackage, I'd get brackage. I wouldn't go to the Fringe for it.
Luke Besson is a new brackage?
I don't know why Nick Cage needs to be replaced Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis could do this today. This is the same role he's been doing for the last 80 years, it seems like.
I agree.
But Willis is great in this movie. I mean, this is a really great reminder before he straight up just started playing washed up and tired. That he was a ball of charisma. The man mm-hmm. really does have a lot of screen presence. And I think that's... And Gary Oldman, too. I mean, as we stated, he's just dynamite.
Yeah.
He's so much fun. Just playing full-on character. And Mia Jovovich not turning in a bad performance.
The funny thing about Jovovich is she got nominated for a Razzie as the worst
really?
Lead role for a woman in that year.
Mm-hmm. Did
and
really?
Chris Tucker also was nominated for a Razzie.
Now, that's just inaccurate. Both of those parts are just so much fun to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Chris Tucker, I could see why that would go over poorly, but I really feel like Jovovich just turns in a really fun performance. It's got some weight to it in places,
mm-hmm.
honestly. Some fun stuff with the movie. Is it just me, or does this movie have a terrible cover?
Oh, like the
DVD,
DVD
cover?
Screen
the DVD screen.
Of the giant disembodied head of
Bruce three
Willis?
Disembodied heads. It's Bruce Willis, Gary Oldman, Mila Jovovich's heads floating, being chased by police cars.
What's not to love about that?
I know, it just fits
I think
the
that represents
movie.
The best part of the movie.
I think it represents... it equally represents what you hate and we love about this film, it seems like. You know, usually I do try to talk a lot about social theory when we talk about movies. This movie doesn't have a lot going on here. Not nearly as much as the films we previously discussed. I will say you could probably do an entire hour and a half long podcast about feminism in this film.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a subject we don't have enough time to get into with this film. I will say that it could probably go either way. I'm going to go down on the side of this being definitely a pretty strong feminist message film. I think it falters in places, but that's just from conventional Hollywood story traits, the romantic subplot, Bruce Willis being Bruce Willis has to save the day, that's just kind of his bag. But I think for the most part, this is definitely a very pro-women film, especially, you know, the fifth element, the title character is just this ultimate being, and it turns out to be a woman.
I would just suggest to our listeners, let's talk about that a little bit more, about feminists and those go-girl power kind of characters.
Mm-hmm.
And where are those earliest characters taking place, you know, in these kind of genres? And we're not talking Ripley, who is in a terrible situation and she figures it out and just
mm-hmm.
wins in the end. We're talking about this is the awesome hero, obviously, from the beginning. And how many films do we have that predate that? And how many films do we have that that follow the fifth element?
And I think that is, I would love to hear what you have to say about that, listeners. As I mentioned in the first episode, you know, there's a long history of female empowerment in genre film. Not always as successful, and again, this film keeps coming to mind. Faster Pussycat, Kill Kill, an early example of this kind of thing. So instead, what I really wanted to focus in on this week was some genre conventions of sci-fi, or as I'm going to call this segment, you can tell us the future because... First of all, we have flying cars, which always means future.
Obviously.
I mean, obviously, it's not the future, you're not flying cars, which is why I'm irritated. It's 2012. Where's my jetpack?
That's right. I'm looking at you, science.
You're failing me.
But as our intro say, you know, where we're going, we don't need roads.
Well said, Dr. Well said. Also, weird clothes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of my least favorite future time conventions, but it works well in this one. The costume designs in this movie are really fun. Also, McDonald's is fancy. Blatant product placement, but when McDonald's is fancy, you can tell it's the future.
I like how it's fancy, but it's kind of slutty, like the girls that serve the...
Oh, real trashy.
Yeah, real trashy.
Also, one of the McDonald's sign says 65 trillion served. I got a chuckle out of that.
Yeah.
We had World Saving Stones. That's just a fun, general adventure movie kind of thing, though. Oh, all the appliances talk for some reason. Desks talk, refrigerators talk, beds talk. Cars talk. It's more fun when your stuff talks to you,
because
mm-hmm. it makes you feel like you're not dying inside.
Is that it?
That's the future.
Dalton needs a hug.
Oh, I don't need a hug. The future needs a hug.
Well, the Flintstones taught us that all their appliances talk to you.
Excellent point.
The cigarettes are like 80% filter. Did anybody else notice that? It was so funny. That was so great. And then the wall talking to Bruce Willis, encouraging him to quit smoking. I got a kick out of that. Just piles and piles of androgyny. Everybody in this movie. And that kind of goes with the weird clothes, but yeah, just, you know, fun things that equal future, like the super microwave that turns powder into a chicken dinner. And finally, we have one of the goofiest future conventions that we see in film. Every number is gigantic. Zorg lays off a million people. A million people! The president talks about having 200 billion citizens in whatever the boundaries of this very unspecific federation are. And again, that's another great one. We have a federation, but we have no idea what that entails.
No, or so, who, yeah.
Or who. But yeah, those are just some fun genre conventions we have in terms of time and setting.
Absolutely. Good genre analysis, sir. Thank you so much. So, Ashley, what do you have to say about this movie?
Well, I was going to ask Arthur, what age did you see the movie? Because I think if you're younger and you see it, you enjoy it a whole lot more than if you, like... If I was older and I saw it now, I'd probably think the same thing that you did.
Mm-hmm.
So...
This morning.
This morning? Okay, yeah that probably explains it.
You know, it's like a fine wine. You need to let it wash over you. Over. Yes.
Revisited in 10 years or 200 years.
How have you not seen this movie?
Never really came up.
Wow.
I have a couple things I would like to say also about the movie. And this is because I think the reason why this movie is great and why I love it is because I have seen this movie. 100 different other situations and 100 different other actors, 100 different other styles. It is that traditional hero kind of story. I'm going to do a little Joseph Campbell with it today. There is always a story of a hero who is chosen from the beginning to be the hero, and it's double this time. We got Bruce Willis because he's got to be Bruce Willis, as Dalton pointed out. And then we've got Mila Jovovich, who is the fifth element, the real hero who's going to save the day. In that story, every single time there is a rejection of the initial mission. It's not for me, it's not mine. Bruce Willis in the cab debating whether or not he's going to help her, and she's doing the very, very helpless, pitiful, please help.
That scene is so adorable.
It is fantastic.
It's just so cute. Is that just me?
Mm-hmm.
That's actually probably one of the standout scenes in the movie to me. It's just a delight.
It's good. It is good. That happens every single film, you know, no matter what you're looking at, you're always going to have that. She's rejecting later because of the whole war thing that she finds out, and she sees what humanity does, and so Mila has the same experience of rejecting perhaps her mission, and then gets talked back into it by Bruce because of love in the end. Also, there's always the wizard, the wizened wizard who teaches you. It's either Yoda in Star Wars, it's Gandalf in Lord of the Rings, it is Ian Holm. Praise God for Ian Holm in The Fifth Element.
High-fiving 1,000 angels for Ian Holm. Oh, man. Whoa, this guy, he's just proven again, he is a consummate actor. So great.
You have him, and then you have the comedic sidekick. Always.
The Fool.
Ruby Rod, the Fool, and he's there. And finally, that the hero makes the journey. And there's an absolute journey in the film. They're journeying to Flossed Paradise. They're journeying back to the pyramids in Egypt. And they realize that self-sacrifice is the only way for this thing to win out. And that's what happens. She allows herself to do what she does. And It's that same Joseph Campbell kind of mythology. Read just some Joseph Campbell, The Power of Myth, and you will know why you love movies. Because the reason why we love these movies is because, not because we've never heard them before, but we've never heard them told this way before. And what the pleasure is that we experience when we watch the movie is not so much this is something new, is that I've never heard it like this. I've never heard it with this voice. I've never heard it with that style. And so that's why I think we enjoy it so much, if we enjoyed it. Which brings me to the final section of our film review, which is, does it go in the trash or does it go on the shelf? And I begin, sadly to my Lev Arthur, where does this movie go?
Trash it.
Well, we are not, we don't want to have unanimity, and by all means, respond to our responses, you listeners out there, and let Arthur have it. Dalton, what'd you think?
That's right, kids. As we said last week, don't be a pod person unless you agree with me. And this is a great case to be a pod person, because Arthur, I'm sorry, you're wrong. This doesn't just go on the shelf. This bad boy's already on the shelf. I love this movie.
Likewise.
Ashley votes likewise. I also vote that this is definitely, I'm going to say this. I don't know if you need to own this movie. It's streaming on Netflix. Everybody's got a copy of it. It comes on TV, I don't know, twice a day.
That sounds about right, actually.
On TNT. You probably don't need to own this movie, but it's definitely something to see, and it's a lot of fun. And it's good to watch with a bunch of friends, some popcorn and some pizza. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've got to say about The Fifth Element. Okay, we're going to move on to our next section, which ordinarily is our trivia in 6 degrees of separation. We're not going to play 6 degrees of separation today because it's just no fun. These actors are well known and they're in everything. And so we're not going to do that as much. We are going to talk a little bit about trivia. And Dalton, I believe, has a little bit of that. Why don't you go ahead and share that with us?
Yeah, I've got a couple of notes. And definitely, I mean, you could probably easily play 6 degrees with Gary Oldman instead of Kevin Bacon, and it would go just as well.
Probably better.
Excellent.
The man's in everything.
Yeah, definitely. I've got a couple of quick notes. Just a few fun notes. The Divine Language, spoken by Lilu and the priest in this film, was written by Luc Besson and Mia Jovovich, who, fun fact, were married shortly after this movie was released. Just got a history of that, because she is now married to, if you want to call him a director, Paul W.S. Anderson, of such works as Resident Evil, 4 and 5 in the first one, and Mortal Kombat. So,
speaking of such nepotism, at the time of the filming, Luc Besson was married to the lady who played the D.Va.
Really? That I did not pick up on.
He also was married to his leading lady from La Femme Nikita. Also, so
I did know that.
It's another recurring trait for him as well.
He's Luke. A nepotistic fool, that's what he is.
He's French is what he is. God love you. Our next fun point, Ian Holm, the priest Vito Cornelius, played a character by the name of Captain Dallas, an alien. And if you had your brain on, Corbin Dallas is the name of our hero, Bruce Willis.
Interesting.
And finally, at the time of its making, this was the most expensive film ever made outside of Hollywood. And had the most expensive effects budget of any film made up until that point. So this movie was made for quite a big chunk of change. And it shows in a great way, because this film is just beautiful. I believe Dustin last week described it as saccharin-drenched Star Wars?
Star Wars on saccharin.
Star Wars on saccharin. And yeah, this is just camptastically beautiful.
Yes, indeed. Any more fun trivia anybody got?
There was one that I saw on IMDb, and one of our guest audience was going to bring it up too, but The Fifth Element, it's all an allegory for sex.
Oh my word, yes yeah. It is.
I think my
By
brain
the way,
just...
audience, the look on Dustin's face is priceless right now.
Mind blown.
You guys ever seen Scanners? It's exactly like that, what just happened right now.
I want to go back and do like Freud or Lacan analysis. In fact, why don't one of you all out there listening do just that? Because my mind is blown and I would love to hear a Freudian reading.
I mean, Mia Jovovich is naked for like the 500th time. I don't know how I didn't... By the way, she is always naked in everything.
Fun fact, yeah.
Not... I can't think of a movie she's not naked
is in. Is it a fun
even
fact?
Chaplin.
Even Chaplin.
Outstanding.
I gotta go scoop my brain up off the floor. I just...
All right, well, instead of playing Six Degrees of Separation, what we're going to do today is we're going to talk a little bit about movie culture. And one of the biggest institutions in all movie culture is the Academy Awards, the Oscars. And we all subscribe to the thesis that the Academy Awards are completely rigged. And that you know what's going to win, what's going to be nominated, well before it's ever even released. There's a whole slate of movies coming out in the fall. There's Django Unchained, there's Lincoln, there is Looper, who just recently came out, which is, I'm going to predict right now, to be the Drive of 2012.
That sounds accurate. We also have Zero Dark Thirty, Catherine Bigelow's return to the screen since she won Best Director and Best Picture for The Hurt Locker.
And then I would just also mention Moonrise Kingdom and Cosmopolis, another couple of really big kind of art films that are going out. And finally, Paul Thomas Anderson's mentioned earlier in the program, The Master. And so we're just going to make a prediction right now, because you can do it just as well before the movies come out as you could after, as to what's going to do really well at the Oscars and what's not. So we're going to go around the table, and we're going to predict who we think is going to win Best Picture and why, maybe Best Director, and just kind of make some general Oscar predictions for the year. Arthur Gordon to my left, why don't you begin?
I think Best Picture is going to go to Argo, director Ben Affleck's new movie. I think this has some steam going into the Oscars. It's Oscar bait. It's a period movie based on a true story. There's a lot going for it there. But I think they could do one of the rare things and split picture and director. And we may see the director go to somebody who deserves it, that they're going to make it up for, never give it to him before. Tarantino could get it, or Spielberg could get it, or Anderson could get it.
Excellent.
And that's what I'm thinking.
Good prediction, sir. Dalton Stewart, what do you think?
Well, Dustin, I couldn't agree with you more. I think Looper will be the Drive this year. I haven't seen any of the movies I'm going to be talking about yet. This is purely speculative.
Oh, I haven't seen Looper either. I'm just saying.
Well, obviously we haven't.
Stylistic action movie. It's an action movie. Oh, they won't love it.
They won't love it. And I will be sitting in front of my television with righteous indignation the entire time, cursing them and how could you, you fools. I can tell you this, Lincoln will win Best Picture. I would bet my firstborn and my kidney on it at this point. Because it's about Abraham freaking Lincoln. And not the other Abe Lincoln movie that came out earlier this year. I think there's going to probably be some half-hearted dispute about the director's race. I think they might pretend it's going to be up in the air for a little bit. There might be some buzz that QT will finally pick up his golden statue. It's not going to happen. But there might be some, you know, disingenuous buzz that he has potential. I will agree with Arthur, though. I think this race does have the potential to split Best Picture and Best Director. It doesn't happen very often. I would not be surprised to see PTA pick up a Oscar for The Master. And I think we might see Tarantino pick up another original screenplay Oscar. I do think that is a distinct possibility. Will it happen? Probably not, but it's his best shot at a statue this year.
Excellent predictions. Ashley, what do you think is going to happen in February?
I don't know. I think I pretty much agree with what has already been said. I might say The Master might win the Oscar because it seems more like Oscar bait, like he said, than the other two films, but I think it's hard competition with Lincoln and Argo. The way you described it, it sounds like that might win instead.
My prediction is that Lincoln is going to win Best Picture, and that the critics are going to say Argo should have won for Best Picture. And that's where the debate is going to lie in all of that. Again, I'm going to say Looper is going to be the snubbed excellent movie because the Oscars are snobby. And I think Quentin Tarantino is going to get shut out. I think he's going to get a whole bunch of nominations and nothing for it.
That sounds accurate.
And that's really just flat out too bad. I am also going to throw out that there's going to be a big Daniel Day-Lewis nomination that's going to get all the buzz, but he's not going to win because he's done it twice, and the Oscars are not about who deserves it. The Oscars are always about whose turn is it. And
now,
I don't know who's going to end up winning.
More importantly, who will pick it up instead?
And my suggestion is going to be that best actor, if he goes in for that category, is going to be Joaquin Phoenix for The Master.
Yeah.
I hear he turns in a hell of a performance in that movie, and it's actually more his story, my understanding, so that would not surprise me.
Hmm.
I would not lose any sleep over Argo winning Best Picture at this point.
Yeah, I don't think it'll happen.
Yeah, it probably won't. I really do err on the side of Lincoln, but if Arthur is right, I'm not going to be sad to see Argo pick up the gold.
I agree. I would also just go ahead and throw out that I'm going to pull for a dark horse for best director this year. I'm going to pull for a split, and I'm thinking Wes Anderson may win it.
I would love to see that.
For best director. And I would like to see that happen again for a movie that I haven't even seen.
I would not be surprised to see Killing Them Softly come out of nowhere and pick up some gold, this being the re-teaming between Brad Pitt and director Andrew Dominik. They last collaborated on The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. That was a film that had some buzz and left some people unhappy when it didn't pick anything up. So I actually wouldn't be surprised to see that come out of nowhere and pick something up.
And if Pitt's performance is good enough to get nominated, they may make it up to him for not giving it to him for Moneyball or Inglourious Basterds. The only other thing, I would love to see Michael Caine take home the Best Supporting Actor for Dark Knight Rises.
That would just warm the cockles
Those
of my heart.
Those roughly 5 to 10 minutes that he had screen time were some of the best cinema this year.
It's not going to happen.
Hey, you know what? Judi Dench won for Shakespeare in Love, and she was on screen for seriously 8 minutes. It can happen, and he is just that kind of sentimental favorite that might go ahead and pull it out. That's an excellent call, sir. All right, well, that was fantastic. Let's move on now, finally, to the last segment of our show, where we talk about what's got us fired up this week, our week in pop culture. And so I begin to my left. Arthur, what's got you fired up this week?
What's got me fired up? I picked up the new Mumford & Sons album, Babel. Been listening to that and really enjoying it. Picked up The Avengers on Blu-ray. And Criterion was having a 24-hour sale a few days ago. And they were doing 50% off, so I picked up Jean-Luc Godard's Made in the USA, David Fincher's The Game, as well as a collection of some old adventure movies featuring the actor Sabu. So that's what my week has been like.
That's awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Good recommendations all. Dalton Stewart.
As previously mentioned, I am beyond excited for Looper. I am a huge fan of Rian Johnson, his film Brick, his film The Brothers Bloom, both wonderfully made. Character-driven exercises and style. And those are words that don't usually go together. You usually get one or the other, and I think Rian Johnson is just wonderful. He's definitely got potential to be one of the biggest names making films, or at least one of the most underrated names making films. I think within the next 5 to 10 years, he will take over that crown. Very excited for this movie. As previously mentioned, we had a listener review of Dread. I saw that between last podcast and this. That is a fun little movie.
Would you also nominate a body part like a chin for an Academy Award based on that film?
That chin speaks volumes.
Does it have its own Twitter yet? That's the bigger question.
Does Dread have its own Twitter
the
yet?
Chin.
Does Carl Urban's chin?
I certainly hope so.
We've seen Angelina Jolie's leg have a Twitter, so I just need to know if
Urban's chin is true.
And yeah, so Dread. Good flick. Check it out if you get a chance. A lot of fun. I would actually recommend seeing this in 3D, which I normally rail against.
What?
I've heard that a lot, though. I've heard it's better in 3D. It really brings it out.
Yeah. I heard a British podcast talking about the film, and they were so furious that they didn't have options to catch it in 2D.
That's actually how I saw it in 3D. The way the timing worked out, I was not able to check this film out in 2D, which I normally do. And I'm really glad for it.
Really?
There are scenes in this film that they really effectively use the 3D to highlight sensory experiences, to highlight action scenes, which is not uncommon, but yeah, to really highlight sensory experiences, namely the use of the fictional drug slow-mo in the film. They really use 3D to make the colors, the oversaturated colors, really pop out. And, but that's my week in pop culture.
Ashley, tell me about your week in pop culture. What's got you fired up?
Well, I actually saw the 2004 remake of Frankenstein by Hallmark, and it's actually pretty good. It follows the novel a lot better than any other movie has. Sometimes.
Now, which one is that one for those of us out there?
It has Luke Goss and Alec Newman in it, if anybody knows those people.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I will say sometimes the sound quality is kind of crappy. Mm. Like, it sounds like someone shot through a tunnel, but it's only like if someone does something like done with the environment. And some of the special effects, they're not all that great. Two scenes, a dog gets run over, and it's like they could have cut that out. But for the most part, it's really good. And I actually want to see a Seven Psychopaths, I think that's what it's called, with what's his name? The Irish fellow.
Colin Farrell. I'm
yeah,
a big fan of the Steve. I'm a big fan of that director's previous work in Bruges, so yeah, definitely one to look forward to.
It's one I'm looking forward to.
Well, that's fantastic. I would also say something I'm not looking forward to that piggybacks on there is a remake of Frankenstein I heard that is in the works, at which Daniel Craig is being spoken to. Or not Daniel Craig, Daniel Radcliffe is being spoken to, to play.
Is this going to be another Hammer movie?
I want to die on the inside. If it's going to be a Hammer movie, it might be all right.
Yeah, I might completely change my mind if it's another Hammer movie.
But
As it stands,
that Daniel Radcliffe and Frankenstein are going to have a filmic baby.
Bad taste in my mouth.
Something needs to not happen there.
Yeah.
But what does have me fired up this week in pop culture is a little TV pop culture that I'm missing right now as we record this on a Thursday night. It'll be out on Monday. Is the release of Last Resort. That's premiering tonight. And I would really like to see this. It sounds like a very interesting concept. It is a story about a submarine that is given orders to make a nuclear attack on a nation. And they disobey orders and are attacked by the American government. And as a result, they go rogue and declare themselves their own sovereign nation on an island. Not the same show you've seen on an island at which it's some sort of cork to stop all evil, but a different sort of island television program. You might know what I'm talking about. And it just seems like it's going to be fun. Andre Bauer, good stuff.
Always fun. Always turns in good work.
I think it's going to be good stuff, and that's going to be a TV series that I'm actually going to pay attention to, and I don't watch a whole lot of TV. So that's what's got me fired up this week in pop culture. What's got you fired up in pop culture this week? Why don't you put that on the blog or on the Twitter or on the Tumblr or all these various places that we have these links to? There are commentary sections, and we would love to hear from you. We'd also love to hear recommendations about what to do next or what to talk about. I have one recommendation that was brought forward to us about a movie to watch, which was Tucker and Dale versus Evil. By one responder, and that is a good possibility. And we have made a decision, however, and it is not Tucker and Dale right now, but it has gone on the list. Next week, we will be looking at 1985's cult classic, Clue, which ought to be a lot of fun. Some of us haven't seen it in a while, some of us have seen it recently. And there will be...
Some of us are less than excited about watching this movie.
The Metacritic score, I believe, was somewhere in the 30s, someone was telling me a minute ago.
To be fair, I haven't seen this movie in a really long time. That being said, there's a reason I haven't seen it in a really long time. But I might change my mind, who knows?
A good time will be had by all, and Christopher Lloyd will be there to speak to us, and that makes me happy.
That is fun times.
So, all right, we'll see you all next time. Please, please comment as much as possible. And also remember that you can follow us on Twitter.
You can follow the entire podcast at good_trash.
You can follow Arthur Gordon at RNDTBL Review. You can follow Dalton Stewart at Dalton Stewart, DaltonStuart. You can follow me, Dustin Sells, Dustin_Sells, SCLLS. And check us out at Tumblr and soon to be coming a Facebook page. So check that out as well. Like us, please like us. We need the affirmation. It's just important to us. And tell us what we're doing right. Tell us what we're doing wrong. Tell us we're all idiots. And we would love to hear that. But we hope to see you next time at the Good Trash Genre Cast.